Hello and welcome to Film Weekly. I'm Jason Solomons, and in this edition, we take the unprecedented step of clearing the decks for one single film. The film is Shane Meadows' This Is England, a film I first saw at the London Film Festival back in October. I thought it was so fantastic that it was going to be the film of the year. It's arrived now, released this week, and it is the film of the year. There are no British films in Cannes this year, they say. I reckon if you put This Is England on in the Palais, it would win the Palme d'Or, no question. So we dedicate the entire episode of Film Weekly to This Is England. We've got the director, Shane Meadows, the producer, Mark Herbert, the cast, Tomo, Shimmy, Stephen Graham, et al. We've even got the fashion and the music. This is Film Weekly and This Is England.
I said, yeah!
Shane Meadows, welcome to the Observer Film Weekly podcast. We've cleared the decks for you for this film, This Is England. We think it's so brilliant that we're dedicating an entire podcast to it. Congratulations on the film, Shane. I think it is absolutely brilliant.
Oh, thank you so much. It's really... I'm actually trying to track down a negative review at the moment. That's my main activity at the moment, is trying to source one. I've heard that... Kathmandu's got one. We've got someone out there trying to track it down at the moment. But no, it has been unbelievable. And, you know, what better film, really, than, you know, to get so much coverage than to have this one with Tomo in it. You know, it makes me really proud.
There's a lot of people that said that this is kind of like Shane Meadows' films before, just a bit more focused, a bit better. Do you think you've improved as a filmmaker? Because I think your energies are pretty much the same as they were when I first saw Small Time.
Yeah, I think there was something that happened on Dead Man's Shoes, which was me kind of almost discovering what my technique was. I think I'd sort of, by doing Midlands, it was almost like me going to university. I didn't realise I'd got a process, and it was only when I threw the baby out of the water that I realised that I did have a process that I wasn't following. And so Dead Man's Shoes was like a retaliation against getting it wrong, if you like. And I suppose This Is England is that coming back together of all the cinematic qualities that I showed in something like 24/7, alongside the rawness of, you know, of the gang crack of Small Time, and I suppose the tenderness and brutality of something like Romeo Brass. So I think a lot of people are sort of almost seeing this as it's almost like the ultimate collection of all my other films rolled into one. I didn't mean to do that, but I think that's how people are seeing
it. Yeah, and I think it may kind of be the one that suddenly makes you kind of branch out and stop mucking about with your mates and go do proper movies.
Probably so, yeah.
But I don't know if you'll ever capture something like this so beautifully again, because as I said to you once before, it was almost as if you were telling the story of my own childhood. Not that I grew up anywhere near Nottingham, not that I was involved with skinheads at all, but it is my era. And, you know, any film that just starts with Ronan Ragnar, it got me there.
It was so funny with this film, because there was like... It'd be so easy to throw money at things if you had too much money, and you'd build sets, and you know, rather than having a sort of title sequence made up of images from the time, you would sort of throw a lot more money at, you know, having tons of kids walk in the streets and show all the different fashions. But because we did have these restrictions, they turned out to be probably the biggest benefit to the film, because we didn't have the money to pay for anything, really. So we had to find a housing estate that had never been modernised, and we didn't have the money to pay for dozens and dozens of kids to be wandering around with Dealey boppers and Rubik's cubes. So we went back, and I knew that the way to get people into that, the zeitgeist of it, was to actually go into the archives and find the footage that meant something to me. And I think by focusing and thinking it was personal to me, it turned out to be universal for a lot of people.
I think that's it, the specificity and the details, because I mean, the clothes are bang on. You know, people watch for these things, they said, no, that Fred Perry with the white trim, that wasn't available then, but you've got them all bang on.
Yeah, I think obviously the skinhead clothing side of it was something that I wanted to get absolutely right. And it wasn't just a costume thing, it was about having, you know, the skinhead gangs that you see in films like Romper Stomper in particular, they're almost like a sort of Amazonian breed of skinhead. You know, it's like tall, lean, you know, mine's got a fat kid, a short kid, a tall, slick, you know, and that's how I remember my childhood. You know, there wasn't enough of us around to make one groovy gang of skinheads. It was this real raggle-taggle sort of, you know, patchwork quilt of different shapes and sizes. So some of the skinheads, if you look at the poster, of which I'm really proud of the poster, because it's like Quadrophenia but with fatsos in it as well, you know, it's like a very uncool Quadrophenia, which I love.
Do you have affection for that time? Because you look at the film, one's never quite sure. The film is, yes, sentimentally nostalgic in parts, but then the body bags are coming back from the Falklands. You know, all of your nostalgia is tempered with this kind of bass note, this deep kind of note of dread and warning, even in the music.
Yeah, I think that's coming, especially as you grow older and you look back at wars, you know, you look back at the Falklands War. And as a kid, I remember going to the Falklands, and I can remember the headlines from the newspapers, you know, Union Jack spread everywhere, you know, bring down the Argies, you know, gotcha, you know, all of that. And it was, you know, headlines like that coming off the back of basically us, you know, sending highly trained paratroopers in to fight 16-year-old kids from Argentina, you know. And as an adult, when you start to come to terms with that and the fact that you were behind it, almost like England were going to the World Cup, yet we were actually going to, you know, murder people and kill people at least. That was something that, you know, as an adult, I kind of thought, I was looking through this footage and I felt quite ashamed of it, even though obviously I wasn't the one that sent us there. The fact that we went there and Margaret Thatcher got back into power off the back of it, and was, you know, it does make you question the reasons. And it just so happens that there's this similarity now with the sort of, you know, Blair and Bush going to Iraq. And, you know, I didn't do it on purpose, those things, but I think the film does, it's as much about then as it is about now, you know, and that idea of someone bullying another nation and using superior technology in the way that I was looking at the footage of the Falklands, and it literally was like, it seemed like Mike Tyson wandering into a playground and picking a fight with a six-year-old. You know, there was no chance that they could have done anything about that, and that's as brutal a level of bullying as Combo is to Milky. When someone's got no chance, that's something that I abhor, you know.
And I think that your film brings that out beautifully, and the sort of generations as well, because you're tapping into what was a mod skinhead reggae revival, because yeah, really had been a sort of late 60s, early 70s flowering. Then yeah, I think your film might even bring that back again for another generation. Are you conscious of, you're telling a story for people, some of your cast were born in 1983 when the film was shared, like Shimmy and Michelle. They don't know about this stuff. You're the man that's teaching them.
Yeah, well, I think there was this gap. I mean, I looked around for skinhead work project, TV projects, you know, and you know, you come across the three most memorable would be American History X, Romper Stomper and Made in Britain, and none of those address the reggae and the birth of skinhead and what it actually came from, and the fact that even in the 80s the gang that I got involved in did actually massively promote listening to Oi. But at the same time, if you're listening to Oi, you listen to Samarup, you listen to Toots, you listen to the Upsetters. One week they'd go and watch The Business, The Foreskins, and then the following week they'd watch Desmond Dekker. You know, these people really knew where they'd come from. And so how, you know, the lingering memories of skinhead culture that people can access on the internet or access through film seems to be that far more negative right-wing Nazi racist, and it's because it makes better press images. You know, I don't think the press have really found any interest in showing the true past of the skinhead culture, because it's sells more papers to have a 9-year-old kid doing a Nazi salute than it does to have, you know, two white and a black kid playing pool in a youth club, you know, together.
Well, I think your film certainly helps kind of bring that memory to the fore. We're going to have to let you go to sex, but I'm going to see you later down at the NFT.
Fantastic.
My honour to be introducing it, Shane.
Magic, thank you.
Now listen, Ducky darling. The ones that you're looking at, these boots, now they're adult sizes and you're a size 4. But these have just come in from London. Are you ready for these? These are fantastic. Mum,
oh, look at them, Sean. They're absolutely lovely.
You want old one, they are.
Oh, my God.
They're nice, aren't they?
They're lovely, them, Sean. They look lovely, them. Try them on.
Don't try them on.
Doc Martin sign.
These ones, because they're special and they're from London, they don't have the Doc Martin sign on these. They're too special for that.
It says Tompkins in it.
Because the ones from London say Tompkins. Everywhere else say Dr. Martin's. These ones,
I love them.
Special.
I think they're lovely, actually. Do you still like them?
Yeah, they're going like hotcakes. Oh, do you want to try one on? Shall we try?
I fucking want them.
If you swear, I'm sorry about that.
It's
so Sean, don't swear.
My name's Thomas Tergus and I play Sean Fields.
And you play him very well, Tom, if you don't mind me saying so.
Thank you.
This is your first acting role.
Yeah.
And it's a lead role, it's a star role. Mm. Were you scared? Did you have any idea what was going to come out?
No, not really. I didn't really think much of it, so.
But you just had to trust Shane?
Yeah.
Is that easy?
Yeah, because he's a nice guy and he's just, I don't know, I just sort of went on and did what Shane told me, really, and just, Stephen said, whatever you do, we just always listen to the director and
Joe, the woman who plays your mum, told me about a night that she sat in with you and watched Leonardo DiCaprio in what's it, in Gilbert Grape.
Yeah.
Because him and he was about the same age as you.
Yeah, but he was. I thought that was like one of the best films I've ever seen, and like since I've seen that, I've like watched quite a lot of Leonardo DiCaprio's movies, and Stephen, who worked with him on Gangs in New York, actually got him to write me a letter and sign it. So, and it was a nice letter. And
what does it say?
It said that it spoke to Stephen, and Stephen told me what I was like to work with. And he put a little speech in it saying that pain is temporary, but film is forever.
You all just pick on me. Everyone does.
Oh, come and sit down, mate. I feel bloody sorry for you. Just come and sit down 5 minutes. Just give me 5 minutes to make you feel better. Come on, mate. Bloody hell. It can't be that bad, eh? So what's this? Who's picking on you, lad?
Some lad at school.
What's his name?
Harvey.
Harvey? So the bloody girl's name is Harvey.
Hello, I'm Harvey. I've come to give you Jip. I've got one of these for you, Sonny Jim.
What I was going to ask you was that you know all this fuss about the 18 certificate, that you can't now see your film in a public place.
Well, it's coming to the Parkway in Grimsby. For me, it doesn't really make any difference. I mean, I've seen it and it doesn't really bother me whether my friends can go see it or not, because quite a lot of my friends have seen it on Pirate, so everyone's seen it on Pirate, and it's going around all over now. So
they've got their ways and means of getting in anyway.
Yeah.
But do you think, I mean, could you understand why a kid your age shouldn't be allowed to see it? Is there anything
No, I think it's ridiculous, because there's one racist scene and there's one violent scene, and obviously it's got a lot of swearing, but you'll see it in all over London, Liverpool and places like this. Kids all swear in the playground, and you see it where kids get stabbed in playgrounds, and in Moss Side and Withenshaw, there's people, little 10-year-olds walking around with guns and things, and it's, I don't think it should be an 18, I think it should be a 15 all around the country. I've seen a lot of 18s and 15s before I was 15. I was watching 18 films when I was 11, and it's just, I don't really pay much attention to these certificates.
Exactly, and you're a Man United fan, I can see, in your top.
Yeah.
Nervous times for you.
Yeah. Well, I know that Man United are going to win the Premiership. I'm not sure about the Champions League, though.
Oh, well, it's an exciting time for you, Tomo.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on Film Weekly.
All
and
right.
Congratulations on being the subject of a film at the National Film Theatre tonight, BFI Southbank. Shame you can't see it, though.
I've got a meeting with an agent, so I can't go see it anyway.
So. That is the right answer.
Yeah.
My name's Joe Hartley, and my character is Cynthia Marie Fields.
My name's Stephen Graham, and my character's called Combo.
Joe, let's start with you, because this is not the first time you've worked with Shane, is it?
No, I think it's the fourth time, actually, yeah. I worked with Shane on Dead Man's Shoes. It was the first sort of feature film that I'd done, and really enjoyed making that one. It was great. He brings something out of you. I think he just lets you. Obviously, he looks at the cast and he casts people that he thinks have something of the character in them, but that can bring something as well. So it's nice because you learn a lot from him and you get to be very real. You don't have to act and pretend. You know, he's quite an organic director. So yeah, it's great.
What about with this one, with This Is England? How did he pitch this one to you?
He didn't. He just said, we're going down to Nottingham, we're going to Wagamama's, and we're going to get some tea, and then we're going to go to the workshop and meet a load of kids. And I was like, right, what are we doing that for? And he was like, oh, I've got this idea for a film. So I was like, I didn't ask him anything else. We went and had some dinner, then we went to the Carlton workshop, and he put me in a room with about 18 young lads and sat me in the middle and said, right. He gave us all a scenario, and I had to do about 20 little pieces with them all. And I think that was my audition, really. I know I'd worked with him before, but I definitely still had to audition for the film.
And was that to test your relationship with the kid?
The kids, yeah. And then obviously, so I think he might have been looking at me as well, seeing how he could fit me in or whatever. He had an idea for the mum, and then obviously it went well. And then he said, look, I'd like you to come round with me and cast the little boy, Sean. So I went round with him on quite a lot of auditions, and then yeah, we went up to Grimsby, and that's where we met Tomo. And he was the only person that I didn't know what had kind of hit me. I was really confused. And Shane was like, that's him. But he was very real, very honest. He had, like, lots of grit going on, but he also had a lovely little vulnerable side to him as well, so.
Did you take to him like a mum?
I did, yeah. We're like best mates, you know. I'll probably know Tomo for the rest of my life, I think. He's a really good little mate. We get on well. He's lovely with me. He's a real gentleman with me.
Because he looks up to you because of you. Of all the people in all the film, everyone else got like really cool fashions, like skin. You, as I mean, really, that hair.
I know. I did go out when I finished filming as well. Stephen bought me a hat, actually. He felt really sorry for me. After calling me Nigel off EastEnders and Brian May.
She was the bastard daughter of...
Brian May and Anita Dobson.
That's right. Their bastard child.
Everybody thinks it's a wig, and I'm like, oh, I sacrificed for my heart for that. I've had to have it cut off. I went out one night when we'd wrapped in Manchester and got absolutely hammered, but I had like normal clothes on. Everyone was like, oh my God, she's wild.
But Joe, thanks anyway. Brilliant performance. And if I can move to you now, Stephen.
Sure.
We've been talking about Joe's hair there. Yours was a bit easier to do.
Yeah, it was every other day. I just had to get it shaved. Well, it was a bit of a nightmare growing my hair back, though, because, you know, I used to have nice hair, but then I ended up with this Brillo pad thing going off. And I feel like I'm on a Vidal Sassoon show or something. Where's Nicky Clark? So, yeah, I wasn't too happy with that, really.
Because of all the people in everyone else, I think looks like they're having great fun in the film, but you come along and he's not so nice, really, Combo. No one really likes him that much, do they?
He's a product of Thatcher's Britain at the time, really, do you know what I mean? He was in and out of foster care, and just the way, you know, the genius of the way Shane works, you have a backstory and you spend like, we spent about 2-3 weeks really creating a character, and then you just forget it all. But I like him, I'm gonna like him, and what we wanted to do was create this character, a kind of skinhead that people had never seen before. We wanted the audience to go away not liking him, hating him, but having a lot of sympathy for him. I have it like that tortured kind of character thing going on with him.
He is pathetic in the kind of most classic sense of the word. He has got these flaws in him. Yeah, he's hugely charismatic because he does have these followers, you know. But some of the speeches that you have and the dialogue you have, we talked earlier that Shane likes to improvise them. How much of it was your input with him, and how much did Shane say to you, like, you've got to do this speech like this?
You know, it's not like a dictator in any way. You bounce off each other totally. I mean, I suppose the best way I could describe it is you're like a kite. And he, you know, he flies you, he guides you, and you just go in and out. And that's quite a really deep analogy, I thought, for myself.
That's what this nation has been built on, proud men. Proud fucking warriors. 2,000 years, this little tiny fucking island has been raped and pillaged by people who have come here and wanted a piece of it. 2 fucking world wars. Men have laid down their lives for this. For this, and for what? So we can stick our fucking flag in the ground and say, yeah, this is England.
Really funny story, actually. I had diarrhoea that day, so every time he'd say cut, I was just running to the toilet. Honest to God, and halfway through that, I'm thinking, oh, man, I really need the toilet bad here. But like Shane told me, because he had a combo character, a combo figure in his own life. You know, the film is semi-autobiographical. So he'd tell me stories about what this combo was like and what he'd do, and... You know, we just really discussed it and chatted about it, and then you just go in and see what you can do, really. And I mean, a lot of that stuff came out of it after that first day's workshop. When I went home, and then I phoned Shimmy, and I told Shimmy that I'm actually mixed race. And then when I told Shane that I was mixed race, I thought I mightn't get the part, but he said, nah, that's, you know, let's use that. Let's play on that. And that was sort of some of the backstory as well.
Brilliant irony of the piece. This is indeed England. Now, just before I come in to interview you, I happened to be flicking through the channels last night, and there you were in Martin Scorsese's Gangs of New York, sitting next to Leonardo DiCaprio, going, oh, yes, Leo, go on, throw a knife at Nasty Bill, which is amazing. Your little face beaming out, completely different to Combo, of course, but I found it very fascinating because the one director that I have talked about with Shane before is Martin Scorsese. I know he's a real hero of Shane's.
Yeah.
Just tell me about the differences between the two of them.
I mean, they're both little, fat and very funny. But and apart from that, they're both, if I'm honest, you know, I'd look at Shane sometimes and I'd think the similarities were amazing. You know, the enthusiasm, the way they work with actors, the way they talk to actors. And the similarities are absolutely amazing between the two of them.
Because I mean, and you've got to think that some of Scorsese's early stuff, The Mean Streets, The After Hours, they're
totally
very tight.
I completely agree with that.
Can you see Shane going on to doing something big budget, big set, like Scorsese's?
I'd like him to, yeah. I'd like him to get a couple of million in his back pocket. I think he should do, yeah, defo. Yeah. That's good, that, though. I think we should try and sell that.
And how is Leonardo DiCaprio? He looked like he was having a good time with you.
Oh, he's fine, yeah, he's lovely. I was with him last night, you know.
He's all right. I saw him a couple of weeks ago and he was sound. I showed him a little bit of the film and he can't wait to watch it, actually.
Do you think he would get this? Do you think America will get this?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. You know, it's a film about a young boy growing up in hard times. I think universally, I mean, I was blown away with the reception that the film got in Rome. The Romans absolutely adored the film. And, you know, you thought maybe with the language barrier, they mightn't quite get it. But they did, they really got it.
Well, we get it here. Thanks very much for coming on The Observer Film Week. Lovely to see you with your hair back to some kind of semblance of normal. You, Stephen, I don't know if that's normal, really. No. Andrew, this isn't the first time you've worked with Shane.
No, I did Romeo Brass. I did Once Upon a Time in the Midlands. I had a little cameo role in Dead Man's Shoes, which turned out to be near enough like Where's Wally, because it's really hard to spot me in it. But I am in there.
So you've become, you're pretty constant throughout, because it's been quite a while that he's been, you know, doing, as you mentioned, Romeo Brass. It's a few years now.
Yes, 8 years.
You've kind of growing up with him.
Yeah.
And how did he find you, Vicky?
Well, the same time he found Shimmy when we did Romeo Brass. So I worked with him on that, and I've kind of been involved with some of the projects that he's had in mind that have never really taken off. So I've got quite a bit of experience with him.
So did you improvise the dialogue?
It's all improvised.
But even on the stuff we see on screen, is that improvised?
Yeah, it's all improvised. I mean, Shane will say, you know, if you don't, make sure you say this line because it's vital to this scene, or, you know, make sure you do this or whatever, and it gives you, like, guidance, but he tends to just let it roll. I mean, it was a bit difficult at times because there's so many of us on set and we're all, like, fighting for, to say our bit, and there's a lot of people and it's all improvised, but the more it went on, the easier it got.
So how many uncles have you got? I've got three uncles and two aunties.
It's a big family, then.
Yeah. They're always round at Christmas and stuff like that. We all get together. Big party till late in the morning. Yeah, it's nice. It's nice having a big family.
What about your clothes? Because, I mean, the boys look great as well, but the girls, I think, are even harder to get right in that era. Did you bring some input to that? Do you remember that
era? Yeah, we chose our costumes, really. They basically said, here's a room full of clothes, you know, go and try some stuff on. And for my character, I just put the jeans on, put the shirt on. Everything that you see in the film was the first thing I picked up, so I didn't change anything.
You, Andrew, you've got a brilliant pork pie hat.
Yeah, I loved my costume. Like Vicky said, about 2 weeks before the shoot, we had a whole day where it was just, like, they did all the hair. Then we went on to try the costumes on, and they said, you know, if you don't like it, don't worry. You know, if you want to change anything, then feel free. And as soon as I tried it on, I was like, yeah, this is good. And I came out, and Shane was like, that's exactly how I wanted it to look. And, yeah, it turned out to be quite a cool...
Are you ready, Sean?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
You don't seem very confident.
Just do it.
Your mum's not going to come round, is she, and whack my door down?
No, just freaking do it.
Right. Here we go.
Get that mop
it's
off.
It's coming off.
Oh, my God.
All right, pink head.
Yeah, we're getting going now. Yeah.
Stop fidgeting.
You're doing a good job, mate.
Oh, mate, it looks better already, that. Done it, Mel?
Definitely.
Well
definitely.
Done, mate.
You're looking good.
Oh, there's loads of it. It's just never ending.
Don't be rough with him, lol. He's only a baby.
Now, I've got to ask you about that. What I suppose is perhaps one of the most powerful scenes of the year in British cinema, and certainly in this film. And it's the scene that we hear as what's tipped the film over into this 18 certificate, which everyone's a little bit perturbed about. I spoke to the British Board of Censors, and they tell me that scene where you and Combo have the violent encounter was a bit of a shock. Tell me just about playing that scene.
To be honest, when Shane first told me about this scene, me and Vicky were up at his house one day, and he said, like, over a bowl of chilli, like, I've got this idea of this scene that I want you to do. And he told me about it, and straight away I was well up for it. I was like, yeah, definitely, bring it on, you know, I'll do that. I didn't really anticipate how draining it was going to be physically and more mentally. I mean, it was really, really hard, a hard scene to shoot. Me and Stephen both used stuff out of our own past and our own life to get the emotion as high as possible. I mean, like Stephen mentioned stuff about my mum while we were shooting it, because my mum passed away when I was five, and I did the same for him just to make sure that the emotion was right up there and it was as real as it could be. And I think we managed to pull it off.
I think you did, certainly, as well. I won't be forgetting it, and I don't suppose you would as well.
No, nice one.
To keep you lot under control, he deserves an Oscar, I think, apart from the fact that it's a brilliant film. But congratulations, you two. It was brilliant. Lovely
Thank
to see you.
Thank you. You were great as well.
We're down at the National Film Theatre in the Green Room with Shane Meadows and his producer Mark Herbert and a whole unruly bunch, half of his cast are here. They're waiting to go on stage to introduce This Is England. I've always thought of you as someone who must be very difficult to produce, actually, to sort of tame him and his methods and kind of get him into production. And I think, you know, with Once Upon a Time in the Midlands, you yourself admitted to me that going through that kind of political process of like the whole kind of production process was a bit daunting, and it wasn't quite what you were used to.
Definitely.
And you'd obviously kind of rediscovered that with Dead Man's Shoes with Mark. Mark, how did you sort of approach the taming the beast that is Shane Meadows?
I mean, to be honest, I think ultimately we get on and have a laugh together. So no matter how hard, and it does get hard, you know, and there are times when I'm under a lot of stress, there are times when Shane's under a lot of stress. But I think the main thing really for me was just why take, you know, I can see from his choices and his instincts that they're right. So why do you then have to not trust them? So there were things that I just kind of went with, you know, and really, really nervous, like held on tight. But you have to go with it. And on Dead Man's, it was kind of a case that we just raised enough money, not too much, that we had a lot of freedom, some good execs. And I think really with that, it was like, well, Paddy, Shane, you know, whatever happens, it's going to be good.
Because, so, I mean, it was a great canvas for the Warp music at the time as well.
And I think also just even, you know, Warp's ethos has always been that. And I've produced for other people, and I kind of felt, and used to be a location manager, used to sit with directors who were getting their, almost their visions, you know, even before they'd even set foot on set, stamped out by producers and execs. And almost directors break down in the car when I'm showing them a location. I was thinking, I'm never going to do that as a producer. So, you know, I think that ultimately, it's not about you have to work this way. This is how you make a film. I think that films can be made in very many different ways. And, you know, and I think that we found a process on Dead Man's that we applied to This Is England. Bigger budget, bigger crew. But a lot of those things of letting Shane not have any, you know, not script and everything. You know, trusting his instincts on cast.
But what was, it's clear immediately, the first one I ever saw, it was like, this guy knows, can get dialogue out of non-professional actors. He can get performances out of non-professional actors. And you've obviously had an ear for exactly what you wanted to hear on screen. How does he do that, Mark? I mean, you've watched him work. How does he do that all the way from, he's been doing it for 15 years. How's he brought that all the way to This Is England?
I wish I knew, because I'd go and do it myself. No, I'm joking. I don't, to be honest, I think there is a real knack of, I think there's a very strong instinct there, and I say instinct in a way that it's kind of, I think, seeing the best in people rather than, you know, so you're seeing things that are very raw. And especially on This Is England, it was slightly different on Dead Man's Shoes because we had very little time, you know, 2 months after we'd met, we were filming. So I think with This Is England, what was amazing was just seeing how the cast was assembled in a kind of way that he lets them bring something to it. So he talks to them and there's a guiding thing, but actually, you know, they, Tomo, you know, Gadget, they bring themselves and the gang become, and that's why I think they're real, because, you know, it's all about it's chemistry, and it's spotting that chemistry and going, actually, and the ability, like I said, the ability on Dead Man's to change, to go, you know what, we're going to kill him first, but he's really good, so we'll keep them three together and we'll kill him next. You know, and it was like, and I think you've always said that people earn their screen time, you know.
Yeah, and it's that sort of ethos of short filmmaking, of like, you know, you can, when I was making my very, very early shorts, you really did get what you were given. You know, there was a guy up the road called Jimmy who was like a bit of a pothead and, you know, seemed to be the oldest student in the world. You know, and there was this mad, you know, a couple of single parents up the street, and they'd in the film. And so it was really a case of, right, you know, what can anyone do? If you can do anything at all, you're probably going to have a really big, massive role in this. Yeah. If you can talk without shaking. and then obviously, I put myself in the early films that I made, and I had to be in everything to sort of almost give other people the confidence to do it. And so by doing that, I think I kind of learnt a lot about being relaxed. I could stand in a room with a non-professional crew of people and be confident enough to act because no one was there to say that I couldn't. Whereas I think if, you know, a lot of people make their first film and there might be people out there listening to this who go, you know, they get told by people, you need this, you've got to have an established this producer or whatever. And whereas, you know, you might be able to make something much more assured and confident based on your own friends or family. You know, maybe you've got a relative in your family who's, you know, you've got to do things that are individual to your own life. And I was making films about Utoxeter and my impression of the characters from Utoxeter and, you know, using other people as a vessel for that.
Jay, it's been brilliant seeing you. You know what? I love this film. The only cloud that I can see in this film, we haven't even found a bad review of it yet. I'm sure the Daily Mail will kind of come after you at some point.
Tucky Turkey
is waiting for you, basting away in the oven.
I heard they like it. Baz liked it.
Baz will.
I don't think Tucky likes anything. I shouldn't be saying that. It's colleagues. But the only cloud that's been drifting across this is this 18 certificate. Now, we talked to Tomo earlier because he can't be here to see the film.
Yeah.
What's the latest that's happening with that? I know, Mark, you were trying to kind of get things overturned gradually by the
people. Yeah, we kind of, weirdly enough, I'm doing my hometown, Sheffield, which I thought, I know the guy who was the cinema, was really devastated by it and invited the local council, but they've actually held it up. I think Bristol overturned it. Bristol were the first.
They have the power to overturn
the BBFC.
It's an
advisory thing, but a lot of them, you know, it's just such a shame. I don't know, I feel like just making something, you know, I feel like doing something with Warp that's just ultra-violent, ultra-loads of, you know, horrible stuff going on. Just because with this, I mean, everything was considered by Sher. Everything was so discussed and thought about and talked about Tomo, about language, and it's great, I mean, because there's two bits of violence in it, you know, nothing compared to the 300, which got a 15.
Yeah.
And it's affected people, so Shane's accomplished what he set out. It is so powerful. But to actually be given an 18 because you are more powerful than the violence in the 300 when they're slaying people. I mean, I would care about that film. I wanted a sword.
It's unbelievable. It is. It's a compliment and a slap around the face, you know, because if I can achieve with one beating, no one dying, if I can achieve what someone couldn't achieve with 300 or Jeepers Creepers or, you know, snakes on a plane where there's people being slayed and heads rolling left, right and centre.
Big cobra biting somebody's penis.
Yeah.
That's on a plane.
Anything you like goes, as long as we don't care about it.
Yes. Yeah. If you care about it, you're going to get an 18.
Yeah, it is.
And it's just a shame because actually what's interesting is we've been asked to go and talk and to a lot of children's film festivals. It won an award in Rome, voted for by teenagers. People who I know who have seen the film, friends who are teachers, are like saying, it's such an important film for us. You know, we want this on our curriculum. They actually want it for under 15s, weirdly enough.
That's 14s. The thing is, though, that anyone who like then connects with Shane's film will have the ingenuity and nous to kind of sneak past the usherettes and get in and see it anyway.
Or access a pirate off Mark's pirate ship.
So you're not going to Hollywood to do those 50 million when you're staying in England, because this is England.
Yeah, completely, yeah. This is our England.
My Yorkshire.
My Yorkshire.
What did you think the other night?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm on about? In the shed and stuff.
Yeah, that was alright, yeah.
Did you not think much to it?
Oh, yeah. It was really nice.
You know when I asked you to suck my tits and stuff? I just thought that you weren't that into it.
I only didn't suck your tits because I've never done it before.
But I thought you'd seen a pair of tits in Germany or something.
No, I've seen a pair of tits, but I didn't suck them.
Yeah.
I play Smell, and my name's Rosamund Hanson.
Ros, lovely to see you. Thank you so much. I wanted to ask you about the kind of sexual tension that's between you and Tomo, because he's like 12 and you're fully grown kind of 16-year-old.
Yeah.
What was it like kind of looking down at this boy, looking up at you, wanted to lick you?
Right. Well, it was a late night scene. We were in a shed, very tight schedule. So we kind of, amongst the madness of it all, I didn't really have much time to think about it. So we were sat there and we're doing improvisation amongst a loose script. When I got the original script, it was Smell and then the line, do you want to suck my tits? It then grew into a bigger part. But when I was in the shed, I think it was quite late night, and we just sat there and Shane was like, right then, smell, you know, he'd seen me do an improvisation, so he kind of knew that I'm daring as an actress. I like doing things like that, and it was great to just kind of push the boundary. And it was, I realised that it was funny, but at the same time I wanted it to be sincere.
Yeah, but have you ever fancied a kid who's like 13?
No, but I know kids of the age of 13 when I was in that kind of social group that were kind of doing the nitty-gritty with girls that were a bit older, and girls who were a bit kind of grimy and, like, you know, a bit kind of, yeah, I'll have anyone. And that's who Smell is, really. She's really happy-go-lucky, kind of, yeah, I'm up for anything. But, you know, she really saw some kind of a light in this little boy, and she absolutely fell in love with him.
I'm outside the NFT BFI South Bank now, after Shane Meadows' Q&A. Some celebrity guests have assembled. I see Noel Gallagher. I pounce in the name of the Observer Film Weekly podcast. What does this superstar of rock think of Shane Meadows? Noel Gallagher, lovely to see you in the audience here at Shane's NFT gig. Are you a fan of his work? Have you seen his before?
Yeah. Dead Man's Shoes is a big one in our band. And Room for Romeo Brass, I remember seeing about 10 years ago. I had a copy of it from somebody, I can't remember, I just played it to everybody that came round to our house.
It's not enough people know it, do they?
I think that's his best film for me.
Did you like This Is England?
Yeah. Shane's films always follow the same path. It's always great, and it's really funny and spot on, and then you know the real uncomfortable bit is coming. And I think this one is more uncomfortable, really, because everybody remembers the Thatcher years and the National Front and stuff like that.
Looking at you now with that good head of hair, hard to imagine you were ever a skinhead. Where were you during the skinhead years?
I've got too big a nose to be a skinhead, I'm afraid. I was well, I did like the Specials and all that, you know. When we was growing up, I left school in 83, so it's around about the time I left school, and the Specials were massive. And not so much the skinhead culture, but the look, you know, everybody still wears Ben Shermans and stuff like that. I've grown out of the Doc Martens, but you know,
because in Shane's first film he used a lot of Britpop. I think he used some Oasis, actually.
Oh, did he? There was talk of us doing some music for this one, but never quite got around to it. It'd be nice to do something with him in the future.
But in the end, Toots and the Maytals, you're happy to bow down to that?
Oh, yeah, well, fucking hell, yeah.
No, lovely to see you. Thanks for coming.
All right, thank you.
I'm with Gavin Watson, a photographer whose pictures of skinhead culture adorn the National Film Theatre at the moment. Gavin, we've just seen This Is England. That must move you in some way.
Oh, it evoked so many memories. It was I was in tears a couple of times there, just for the fact of seeing my life up there on screen and my friends' lives, and it to be told truthfully, you know, because when the book first came out, I was like the only skinhead that had created anything. So I was like waving the flag for all the skinheads around that had been skinheads, and having to talk about racism and to have a movie out there now that I can say, well, if you want to know about my photographs, go and see the film, because that's reality, that's what skinheads were.
Your photographs have appeared in The Observer, and they adorn a wall here at the BFI South Bank. They look amazing, and they're sort of loving photographs of a disappeared England.
Yes, I mean, the same with the movie. It shows the love and the passion and the love we had for each other, you know. And he's got it so spot on. And there is a lot of love, because behind the cult was a love for your friends.
It's tempting to get a bit misty-eyed about it at moments like this, where you've just seen it reflected on. But there was a nasty subcurrent which Shane Meadows' film brings out. And is it also there in your photo?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I've covered from head to toe in scars. I've got in a lot of fights, and I was a pretty nasty bastard. And you've got to remember, skinheads weren't entering a popularity contest. We were protecting our manor. And the way I looked at it, if you're going to be a skinhead, you should learn how to fight, because you're going to get in one regardless, you know, in some point. So, no. Behind those photographs, eight of my friends were dead by the time I was 28. You know, I've been shot at, but it was rough and violent. But because I was a skinhead, I wasn't going to photograph that. I always felt that there was something important going on, even when I was young. And that's why my love of photography and my love of being a skinhead combined. And these images are a result of that.
Have you got a website, Gavin?
I've got a MySpace page. I'm building the website at the moment. I've been a lazy bastard, but it's about time I had a website, so.
The first skinhead to be down with the kids of these days.
Aye, get me.
Gavin Watson, lovely to see you, mate.
Lovely, thank you.
The sounds of Don Letts on the Wheels of Steel playing reggae, Trojan Records, who are on the soundtrack of Shane Meadows' This Is England. We're down at the NFT under the bridge here at Waterloo. I've been Jason Solomons. I hope you've enjoyed our exclusive podcast about Shane Meadows' new film, This is England. We love it. I hope you do too. Please send us your reviews in 50 words or fewer of This Is England. You can win a This Is England soundtrack featuring the greatest hits of Trojan, such as Toots and the Maytale, all the 80s encapsulated on one little disc, plus a few clips from that fantastic film, This Is England. Let us know your thoughts. I've been Jason Solomons. Film Weekly has been produced by Paul Noble. Until next week, happy viewing and happy skanking.